All right, guys. It's the moment you've all been waiting for. Here we go. We're going to have Kyle and Jeremy on EGLN doing live commentary for episode number 12. Let's hear from Kyle and Jeremy. All right, guys. What's up? Kyle, Jeremy, introduce yourselves.
Hey, I'm Jeff LaPere, also known as Kyle.
And this is Jarrett Kale, known as Jeremy.
All right, and you guys are going to be doing a commentary for episode 12, is that right?
That's right. We're excited for this. We've never actually done a commentary before, and I think there's a lot of stuff we can say with this episode. What about you, Jared?
Yeah, I'm definitely wishing that I had an idea of what this director's commentary was all about.
All right. So, actually, without further ado, since we're running a bit late, we're going to start playing it right about now. So, as soon as I click it, which I'm doing right now, you guys can go ahead. So, go.
All right, so we got the classic James Bond intro here. This was something we wanted to parody. The whole intro sort of has the structure of a James Bond film. Of course, the gun barrel sequence. That gun barrel is actually a Sega Menacer viewing tube that I used that was sitting around. So, yeah, Jeremy does his micro down that gun barrel. So, yeah, in a James Bond movie, of course, there's the gun barrel sequence. Then there's some sort of demonstration of his skills and introduction of the bad guys here. Then, of course, the intro sequence. We had originally planned to do a long musical James Bond type intro sequence, but we actually didn't have time to get that done before the deadlines and the theater screenings. So in the next few weeks, I'm working on this more elaborate episode 12 intro sequence, which we may release on the web or only on the DVD. We're not quite sure yet. But that was supposed to be, you know, like a 70s or 80s James Bond type musical silhouette sequence. Hopefully, I'll get that done pretty quick.
It's a little over the top.
I think it's intimidating.
Well, it's kind of cool.
It's my thing. It's what I do. You know, it's like the... The master and
so these guys in the intro, of course, we got the bad guys of the series. This is Power Glove Guy, Deathstriker 6666, and the spy. These guys are all friends of ours. They're not really professional actors, and we love having them in the show. I think they did such a great job with their characters here, and it was great to explore their characters more. And give, you know, the Power Glove guy some actual dialogue, so you find out what his voice is like there. And this, the big bad is played by William Marchant, and he is a professional actor. He's been in the 4400. He's been in Stargate. He did 3 episodes, I think, of Stargate as one of the bad guys. And he actually teaches acting at Vancouver Film School, so you can tell he's super pro and he does such a great job of this bad guy role.
Yeah, Jeff and I have been really excited for this scene for a long time. I remember thinking back to when we were filming episode 8, in between shots, we were getting excited, fantasizing about this scene right here. We've been planning it for so long to have all the bad guys finally coalesce into the bad guy headquarters and finally sort of give them a home and an identity as a group. I'm really excited to see how this came out. I think it turned out even better than what we expected. Here we have a couple guys, Jay Spencer and Jamie Gilbert, Denwo from our forums, the guy on the left, the skinny English guy. He's actually a longtime forum member, really great fan of ours. He's really helped us out, and he's a really smart guy. And so he was visiting Toronto with his buddy there, Jay, and so we decided... to surprise them by putting him in the show, which is something that's become somewhat common with Pironage, returning some of our favorite fans and taking them and putting them in the show. I think both of them did a really great job here, particularly impressed with all the actors we put in the show that have no formal acting training. always seem to impress. During this Tetris battle, a lot of people would be interested to know that the two people playing Tetris are actually Dave from the show, who was visiting with his family at the time that we were filming this, and he's actually a big Tetris DS player. So we had Dave playing, who represents Jeremy, and the bad guys are represented by Stacy, our Noobstar manager, who is also quite a good Tetris DS player.
And the ending to the Tetris battle, wow, that's it was such great footage. We were really excited to put that in there because it's such a close, you know, if he could have just got that piece in there, he would have got a Tetris. And yeah, it's pretty exciting, I think, anyway. And it's a great ending to the battle.
Hey, noobs, and welcome to the season finale of Pure Only Season 1. This episode is going to be real exciting because Kyle tells me cliffhangers and all this fancy stuff happen at the end of seasons, right? So I expect there's probably going to be big explosions, maybe me jumping off a bridge at one point. Got to have some guy like yelling in slow-mo, like...
Jeremy, I was just using that to illustrate an example of, you know, the cliffhanger ending. We need to have something exciting happen at the end of the season.
Wait, you don't have, like, explosions and stuff?
And the opening scene here in my dialogue,
I've
always felt that I look a little too much like Bill, or maybe Ted from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which... I just finished watching the night before we shot that, and it's kind of funny sometimes when you watch a show or you absorb some content how it makes its way in, and that's one of those subtle things that probably only I would notice. But it, you know, every time I see it, I for those first few seconds of that opening shot, I see a little bit of Ted there.
I can sleep in for like 20 hours and not wake up, you know, kind of with anesthesia and stuff. You know, I thought, maybe.
And here, we're introducing Jeremy's bed. And this is a bit of writing because, you know, Jeremy's room was very bare, and we wanted to spend the hair money in the show so the people knew where the money sort of went inside the universe of Pyrownage. And at the same time, it was 5% influenced by our laziness to be hauling my bed out of my room to film again. Because, you know, before this is actually my room that I lived in. And, you know, before we would shoot, we would move out any of the possessions in my room, which are very few, that I had that Jeremy didn't have, that big bed being almost the only one. And so this time we decided to leave the bed and keep it in the show because it would make sense that a pro gamer has a great bed.
One day I hope to work on a show that actually spends money on building sets. Can you imagine that? I hear some shows actually do that. Some of the, you know, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, I hear that they actually build their sets. Like, what a luxury as a filmmaker. So we had a lot of great material for this introduction. A lot of it is concepts that Jarrett just improvises around, and stuff like the gonna be the same spanking that he's about to do here was improvised, actually. And, you know, it's really great, the kind of stuff that Jeremy does when you just point a camera at him that's not pre-planned.
But I'm not liable for anything that comes out of Jeremy's mouth, just to point out that when I am Jeremy, it's just Jeremy, not Jarrett. So if he ever does anything completely insane, a few of which have not made it in the show because it might have been a little too insane, I absolve any responsibility for those actions.
One of the coolest things about having your own show is, like,
and this is Doug's first appearance in the episode. We had him down. He flew over from Calgary to do some filming for this episode, so we shot all of his scenes. I think it took us 4 days or 3 days of shooting. Yeah, this balcony scene, and he tells his little story about getting kicked from servers for hacking, which is a true story, actually. When Jarrett and Joel play army ops, they often get kicked from multiple servers because people are convinced they're hacking, which Jarrett describes as the ultimate compliment. You're so good, you must be cheating, when in fact they are definitely not cheating.
Yeah, there's like tons of exciting stuff happening at Pyronage right now, you know, like Kyle, he's super excited because we got this like, it's like meeting with like some like...
And these toys, we're working with a friend of ours who designed these little talk boxes. We had Jared and Joel come in the studio and record some of their, some of the fan favorite phrases. I think they're pretty hilarious toys. It's pretty neat to... You know, the Jeremy's excitement for these toys is sort of reflects our own personal, actual excitement to have a show that we have these fun toys, and you can press a button and hear your friend's voice. It's pretty hilarious. We're gonna be putting those toys. Everyone's asking about the talk boxes, and it's just that we're having some logistical problems, but we're hopefully gonna put them in the news store in a couple days. Jared looks pretty good, don't you think?
Oh, hey, Grubby, what's going on? Yeah, trouble with the Night Elves again. Yeah. Well, I think I can pencil the intro.
So maybe we'll start some kind of trend in Pyronage where you have a telephoto shot of a character walking down the street to funky music. I don't know. I kind of like those kind of shots, so we had this here just to introduce the new business Jeremy styles.
Actually, when filming this, when I was walking down the street doing my micro, something which has become a little more common, even in the suit, I got recognized, and we had some cars driving by screaming Jeremy really loud as I was walking, which made it even a little more awkward than it already was. Here I am, name-dropping Grubby of Warcraft 3 fame, which is something I'm glad to have done. And not being a Warcraft 3 player myself, but I do enjoy watching Grubby's matches, and I think he is my favorite Warcraft 3 player. And so I'm glad that we finally got to drop his name in the show. And Moon also, who's a fantastic player, gets dropped later, and they have such a great rivalry, and I always enjoy watching their matches.
You know, I do a little bit of everything. I'm actually... working on a couple projects right now.
Are you a segment producer?
Good question. Not exactly. You know, I spend a lot of time...
So this is guerrilla filmmaking at its best. You know, we were worried about the security guys, so we're like, okay, Dan. Dan's the guy who's greeting us here, the TV company intern. So, yeah, we tried to do this in one take, but fortunately nobody said, hey, what are you doing with the camera and or whatever. You know, no one causes any problems. So we did a few takes, and I think the first one was the one that we actually used, though. Dan is a stand-up he's not a stand-up comic. He's a sketch comic in Toronto. He's part of the Sketchersons, that are a really funny sketch comedy group. They perform every Sunday at the Brunswick on Bloor Street. And I usually go there when I can, just because, you know, they always have fresh material. They're amazing writers as well, and you know, to have a sketch comedy show be brand new every week is really blows my mind, as you know, because you know, we make Pyronage as fast as we can, and we try to get the script as comedically dense as we can, but it takes us many months to finish an episode. But Dan is part of the same comedy group as the two FBI agents, or actually three FBI agents, the FBI boss and the Scully and Mulder type people that were introduced in episode 11.
What's a noob?
And the TV executive scene, the male executive here, is actually Miranda Plant's dad, David Plant, who has some acting training from when he was younger, and we weren't sure how he would turn out on screen, but we were very, very excited after we filmed it. The whole day was just so smooth, and everyone was so positive. And the female executive here is Coco Desti, who's actually David Carradine's ex-wife. Of you know, like the main bad guy in Kill Bill, so it was really cool to work with both of them. And this scene again, like so many scenes in Pyronage, just turned out so much better than we could even have hoped for. And although certainly not in any way accurate, not an accurate representation of our meetings with TV people, it was very, very, very loosely inspired by some of our dealings with TV companies to date.
I mean, you're obviously doing something right. Right. People are watching.
Well, let me tell you why we're very interested in working with you. We work with gaming publishing partners, and we're looking for that new face that gamers can identify with.
Oh, well, the best gamer in the whole world. I mean, obviously that's you.
There you go.
So, part of the package would be that you would...
So the funny thing about the scene is that all of the jokes are pretty much punched by Jeremy's reaction shots. I think those are... What got the most laugh in the theaters. You know, I think the dialogue is pretty funny on its own. You know, for example, Dan's Poning News with Uber Micro got some laughs, and then Jeremy's reaction just erupts the whole theater. So it's really interesting to see the comedic flow of this scene. It turned out really well, I think, and it's really great that we can watch this in the theater and get the feedback that we would like from this, because really... once you've been editing this for many, many hours, it's hard to determine exactly where the laughs are going to be, where the biggest laughs are going to be, and you kind of lose track of the jokes once you've seen them on paper for so long.
In this business, there's a lot of compromise. That's not to say that you guys can't be making your show independently.
It was a shame, though, that most people in the theater couldn't hear the line that comes after, "Of course I'm going to show them my balls," you know, which was, of course, Kyle saying, but did you have to actually show them your balls?
Or, you're have to get used to.
Yeah, Jeremy tells him to lick their balls. But yeah, I think the real punch, which most people, some people commented on the forums that they couldn't hear it in the theater, and that they laughed even harder when they watched it at home because they could finally hear that line.
Yeah, in general, the theater experience has been awesome for us and eye-opening, because you sort of see the difference between content that's created for that sort of theater experience in mind and what we do, which is, you know, we create it from the ground up with the idea that it's going to be watched behind a computer and probably many, many times. So a lot of our humor is very subtle, and a lot of lines we don't consider, that we punch them so quickly following another big joke. And so, you know, it's really interesting to watch the theater and see how many jokes are missed because of the laughter of the previous joke. But we know that when it comes time for people to watch on their computers, none of this will go missed, and it will all be appreciated.
Yeah, one example of tailoring the show for the internet audience is not leaving room for the laughs to die down. So it's still cut very tight here, and we want the at-home viewing or the viewing on the DVD to be sort of the main way to experience Pure Ownage.
What? Why is that dog calling me?
I don't know. Do you know that dog?
I don't know any dogs call.
It's kind of weird.
It's kind of
creepy. As I'm just finishing up my... my explanation to Kyle that there's nothing wrong with snubbing the TV people, you'll notice that we pass Dick on the sign there, which is our little way of dropping a Dick into the episode before his... introduction a few seconds from now. And of course, Dick is played by Kimo, which is in fact my girlfriend's dog, and the dog that I live with. In fact, he hasn't been living with us for a few weeks now. He's been vacationing on his own with his grandma. So I miss him dearly, and it puts a big smile on my face to watch this.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. That's cool. I mean, you got me some kind of present.
Open it.
It was a frustrating experience working with an animal actor because, you know, you really have to think about it differently.
Yes.
You're trying to set him up for the shot, and it just takes so many takes. But in the end, I think the piece of pepperoni that Jarrett was carrying got him to follow Jarrett down the street.
Yeah, I was definitely working with Kimo was a much different experience than any actor we've ever worked with. But in the end, it all just turned out so well, and the reaction in the audiences and the screenings was just so positive that it made it all so worthwhile.
You got me a dog? Oh, he's so cute! Oh, hi, sweetie. How are you doing? Oh. Oh, so what's his name? Hi, sweetie.
Dick.
Here's our introduction of the DS Lite into the scene, which should, you know, to the astute observer, sort of date the introductory scene where Jeremy's playing the bad guys. This is when you should become aware that scene takes place chronologically after this scene. Also, you'll notice when I'm opening the DS, a siren goes off. That's because, again, due to our limited budget, we had one take of the actual unwrapping of the DS, at which point a ambulance happened to drive by at that moment.
Oh, just guild drama. I mean, isn't it amazing how people have the hardest time following the simplest instructions?
Not really. Most people are pretty...
So the dick joke, I thought, was sort of, you know, a little bit too immature, and I was kind of worried about that content, about people thinking it was a lame joke or whatever, but it went over really well with our test audiences of all different age groups, test audiences being our friends and family. So yeah, I guess, I wonder if there's anybody that's going to name their dog Dick because of the show, I don't know.
Some of the filler dialogue here as we get from Jeremy having changed at his house and getting to the bar is most definitely inspired by real-life WoW experiences that Jeff and I have had playing with our guild on Frostmane. And I think the people in our guild will recognize the origins of this dialogue.
If it's not Uber, he gets pretty mad.
Well,
no, it's just my brain, you know? It's kind of important.
And again, we're very interested in sort of slowly developing the other characters in the show, and I'm really happy with how Anastasia developed in this episode. We see some other sides of her other than being this sort of one-dimensional, cute and slightly shy character that she's been in the previous episodes. But you see a little bit of a darker side to her when she's mad at her fellow raiders and her sort of inclination to push Jeremy and Kyle to drink more than they should have, and it was sort of revealing these the slightly darker side to Anastasia that makes her a little more realistic.
Cheers.
We were really worried about our responsibility to the public in this scene, because we're just about to show a few characters drinking a whole bunch of booze. So, you know, and we're kind of, you know, we don't want to glamorize binge drinking too much. So we prefaced it with this sort of damage your brain dialogue and tied it into Jeremy's micro having to be Uber. But after the Calgary Theater screening, some people came up to me and said, hey, you know, I think that drinking scene's a bit too long. So I thought I might cut it down a bit, but it ended up flowing so well with the music as it was. The music is, by the way, composed by Prono Bozo, a musician in Toronto, who helped me out with also the Tetris remix music during the Tetris battle. So yeah, I hope that we are being relatively socially responsible with this scene, but I don't want anybody to think that they can drink 18 shots and not have a hangover the next day.
Well, you're doing it wrong. No, you should be shooting them in the leg. No, you shouldn't be in for that.
I can't recall having ever drank as much Diet Coke, especially in shot format, as we did that night.
The waitress is a friend of Miranda's, and also a student at Trinity College. I originally met her at Trinity College, and I sort of always had her in the back of my mind for a role in Pure Onage because she was interested in acting. So I'm glad we could finally fit her in into this episode. I think she did a great job.
Jeremy, no, seriously. Tell me one thing. Okay. Why does he dress like a ninja?
I can tell you guys this, but seriously. Okay, no, you gotta turn the camera off first, because if he finds out I told you, he'd be so
sure.
mad.
No, don't worry, I'll turn off.
God, I can see the light blinking. I'm not stupid.
Okay, I'll turn it off. Come on.
Right. Okay, this is why.
The master has spent 15 straight years gaming in his basement, with the only light coming from the glow of his monitor. As a result, his skin's hypersensitive to any light that's beyond the visible spectrum.
Again, we're sort of using this moment of the drunken honesty as a way to reveal the information that the master and his army is aware of the bad guy's location, but Jeremy specifically has been instructed not to do anything. And again, throughout this whole scene, you'll notice that Kyle is shaking more and more as the scene progresses, and the view is blurring in and out to sort of suggest that Kyle is drunk as well, which is something that I think worked very, very well. And of course, you know, coming up to revealing this little bit of information we've been asked a lot about, which is why the master wears a ninja costume, which leads into what is my personal favorite scene of the episode, the second scene with the FBI agents, who we lovingly refer to on set as Mulder and Scully.
Bag it. Oh my God. Don't look.
What?
I think the delivery is just so perfect on these lines. You know, we did only 3 rehearsals and we started shooting, and it was just gold. These two actors are part of the Sketchersons comedy troupe in Toronto, and I think just Gary is just so perfect for the part, and Shannon just has the perfect look for these agents.
I just want to say, I know you're a bit new, but honestly, when you got that girl's number.
Oh man, I'm broke.
I haven't watched CSI, but Gary was telling me that this sort of the way he was talking in the scene is inspired by CSI or CSI Miami, one of the spin-offs. I'm not sure which one, but the maybe someone's here to clean up and the W. Yeah, I think it's the word delivery worked really well, and it's great if you can get the reference. So I like, given the format of the show, I like sort of the mockumentary camera jokes, like Kyle's blurred vision when he's drunk is actually losing focus on the camera, and sort of how we could run into the FBI people because we are in the same universe, even though they're in the cinematic mode and we're in the mockumentary mode. I think the transition is something that I really like about this episode. Whatever. This dialogue in this scene has turned out really well, and it's mostly improvised, actually.
This is another example of it being 3 in the morning, and everyone's very, very tired, and I'm not sure how it gets done, but, you know, you just release these bursts of energy as an actor where every take you say is the last take. Let's make this the best one we've ever done. And, you know, we bust that out. And in hindsight, I think it looks very great. And I think it's very convincing that we've been drinking.
Now, the scene where we meet up with Doug for the second time in the episode, this was actually shot a month earlier. So, it's an amazing continuity. And Doug does a great job in this monologue. I like the aspect to the FPS Doug character that Joel adds, the sort of physical comedy, the way that he jumped out there was sort of in Joel's way. You know, all we had told him is just, hey, come out from a bush or something. And I think it's really funny. It's a joke on its own, the way he jumps out from his hiding spot as though he's sort of playing some FPS always in his head.
Yeah, buddy, yeah!
And in the mockumentary mode, you know, there's so much comedy just in reaction shots, especially with these actors. They've gotten so, their characters are so polished. So in the elevator scene, you just see a whole bunch of reaction shots. There's no real dialogue. And then in the bed, then you see Anastasia and Jeremy just sitting there with their eyes open. And there's a lot of comedy just in those shots alone.
You'll notice in the bacon cooking scene that Kimo's hair is shorter than it is in the previous scenes when he's falling down the street. And this is for the same reason. Last one is that they were filmed over a month apart. And so we were actually concerned a bit about continuity with Kimo's hair. But in the end, given our budget, getting him a haircut in an attempt to match the same length didn't seem feasible. And given that I also feel he looks much cuter with his longer hair, we just we went ahead and kept him as he was. The breakfast that Doug is cooking is a personal dream breakfast of Joel and myself and Jeff and many of our friends. It's sort of been an inside joke in our friend group since I can remember, sort of the love of bacon that we all share. And, you know, if you were to make the dream breakfast, it would consist of nothing at all but bacon. And so I'm really glad that we got to put this in the show, because this is a scene that's been at the back of my mind since I was 10 years old.
There is such thing as too much bacon, though, amazingly enough. You know, we had gone and we had picked up bread and lettuce and tomato, and we were eating BLTs that afternoon, trying to get rid of all this bacon we cooked up for the shot. And I was actually sick of bacon. And in the scene where Jeremy and Doug are on the balcony eating bacon, I can tell you that Jared and Joel weren't enjoying that bacon, and they actually wanted to stop eating bacon, which is incredible.
Yeah, I'd have to say that is it's the first time in my life I've actually had an unpleasant experience eating bacon. And it started off, at first, we were all very hungry filming the opening scene when Doug's cooking it. And, Joel and I had the opportunity to eat the bacon, and we took many takes, so we get to keep eating bacon, and we're hungry, and it was fantastic. But Jeff's behind the camera, and Jeff didn't get any bacon, and I knew Jeff was starving, and his mouth is drooling. And I was trying not to make comments about how great the bacon tasted because I felt sorry for Jeff, who didn't have an opportunity to eat it yet. But slowly the tables turned after about take 10 of that involved eating bacon. As we started to get full off nothing but bacon and our stomachs started hurting, we started to realize just how bad it is to eat a meal that's entirely bacon. And all of a sudden I started to envy Jeff and his stomach that was not hurting. And what ended up being, you know, it was a great day, but probably the most negative bacon eating experiences I've had.
So anyway, more about bacon. No, I'm just kidding. But we like it. And anyway, Doug, a few seconds ago, he jumped from the fountain and landed on a stair. I just can't believe that he does those stunts, and you know we don't really request it of him, but it's, you know, because I don't want to be responsible for Joel breaking his leg, but he does it anyway. And again, with the physical comedy. During the part where Jeremy explains that Taji has a raid, and Joel decides to go home and runs home, you know, there's just so much comedy as he's running away, just again in Joel's physical performance. A lot of people say that's, in their opinion, one of the funniest parts of the episode.
I mean, I'm sure you understand, right? An interesting point about that scene, actually, the running away, is Joel, much like me, spends the majority of his days sitting and gaming. And so he actually was so sore after the four takes we did of his maximum running speed running away that he had trouble walking for about 4 days after that shoot.
Now the scene where Doug just isn't getting the hints and you know, he's being told to leave, I think just again the comedic flow is so well done in this. All the actors have the perfect delivery on their lines, and you know, he finally understands. Then he tells Kyle, you know, awkwardly, which is another level of humor that, you know, why is Jeremy not so worried about Kyle? It's just, you know, we have to have Kyle in the show, obviously, otherwise there's no show. But you know, here he is thinking that Doug's a third wheel when Kyle is always there. It's another kind of inside joke for us. But and then of course we had one take of the TV smash scene and it's, you know, we rehearsed this many times, and you know, this is one take, and actually I'm cueing Joel by yelling "bah" really loud, which I later took out in post, so you can see, you can maybe imagine there's a cue there, because if I wasn't going to say "bah," then we would abort the take. We did a few aborted takes with messed up dialogue or that wasn't gold. But yeah, and that's smashing a TV, which cost $60 from Walmart, I think. It was pretty cheap, but yeah, you know, the budget of the show is increasing slowly.
That scene there is, in fact, the only scene in Pyramids that we have rehearsed off camera prior to doing. This is actually one of my, again, my favorite scenes in the episode. And this joke, right? The joke is Kyle enters the room and believes them to be having sex, and then starts to leave the room and slowly starts to edge back in the room. Is a joke that many of the audience members in the theaters didn't appreciate as much as Jeff and I do. And I know that there was some debate in the studio as to whether or not that joke was appropriate or whatnot, given that Kyle's Jeremy's brother and whatnot. But I really think that it's a great sort of insight into Kyle's dedication to documentary filmmaking. And you can imagine the moral struggle in his brain as he starts to leave the room and then realizes that he might be missing what is Jeremy's first time or this magic moment on tape. So he edges back in and does the unthinkable and starts filming. And then the extra punch, the joke, is that when Jeremy realizes Kyle's filming, it doesn't even occur to him what Kyle might have been thinking was happening. He's so innocent with his pursuits that he just, you know, he just asks Kyle to get a better shot or a better angle, and he thinks nothing of it, which, you know, I just love that scene.
And Kyle's incriminating himself with his awkward responses. I think that's kind of funny. Also, that scene was actually Miranda's idea. She came up with that concept of, you know, playing under the sheets and you're actually playing games. And now we're on to the fake ending. After this fake ending, some people in the theater in Toronto actually got up and left because they wanted to be first in line for the meet and greet to get some stuff signed by the cast. But and then they quickly returned to their seats as soon as they realized there was more action. Now, we had a little send-off here for the dog, and not many people will get this reference on a global scale, but all the Canadians will sure understand the reference to The Littlest Hobo, which is a classic Canadian television show. Like I said on the forums, I posted about this. I said, if you're Canadian, you'll really understand why we had to do this. You know, you got a dog in a show, and you need to write him out. You got to have these... Yeah, there goes Dick turning around, and that actually took, I think it was an hour and a half to shoot. We had to position him and reposition him and try to get him to walk away. And also, I like how there's the fire hydrant in the shot. You know, it kind of shows the dog's world.
As a fan of The Littlest Hobo, I was so happy again to include that in the show, and it being my dog just makes it that much more special for me. And we follow into what is the fake ending, and there's a lot of truth to the fake ending. The ending itself might not have been true, but what I'm saying is very true, and it's funny. It was very touching. As funny as it may seem, I was choking up a bit giving that dialogue. Even as Jeremy, as much as I'm not myself when I'm performing, Jeremy was choking up a bit there because you know, he's very proud of the show, and I'm very happy what's happened. And yeah, he really meant it.
Don't worry, we're in a green zone.
So we're on the dream sequence now, which was shot in green screen in my apartment. And, you know, the only thing I think we would want to redo about this is, well, besides the green screen effects, you know, the audio kind of bugs us. You can hear the room reverb, but... And we have some guild members that helped us out. I think two of them, who was it? Was it Myron and Circo? Okay, Onidus and Distract are the two actors, and then we had two others. Myron and Circo are on mob duty, clearing the mobs that spawn because we didn't want them in the shot. So, you know, it's always fun when you're filming in World of Warcraft. You actually have to have crowd control. You can't really control the environment from the ground up. You're in a real world almost, and you gotta have people helping you out to set up the set. And of course, you have to wait till it's noon because we wanted a daylight shot. So it was pretty funny that we couldn't just do it any time. I thought you would be more
talkative. The joke with the note that Jeremy finds was something that I was worried about before the episode. Originally, I thought it was really funny that the note would say Prince is in another castle. But then I started to get paranoid, which often happens, that maybe the next generation of gamers wouldn't pick up on that because maybe they didn't play Super Mario Brothers the way I did so much. But I was very relieved in the theater when it just absolutely burst into applause at that line and settled some fears.
And we're back to the scene that began the episode and finally reveal that Anastasia was in the room the whole time, and you'll notice if you watch it again, the big bad looks at Anastasia when he says, "I don't think that will be necessary." So there's a little bit of a hint there that you might only catch the second time that there's somebody else in the room.
Now let's talk about your future.
Oh, Mr. Psychic now.
I've been known to dabble. Let's just say I understand the events.
So the micro balls fly, and the special effects are done by Davin Langelli. Did a great job in this episode. There's too much to talk about with the effects and sound design, but I don't know, we're just trying to... most of it's done ourselves. And they're slowly getting more and more pro, I hope.
I like Jeremy firing first on the bad guy. This is sort of, in a way, our homage to the Han shoots first topic among all the Star Wars fanatics. I like the fact that Jeremy, he's very serious, and it's hyper-realistic in that you do not allow time for the bad guy to monologue. You take your first opportunity that he's distracted, and you try to end the fight, just like in RTS.
You have no chance to survive.
And then when he realizes his attacks are futile and that he's facing someone who's significantly more powerful than him, he immediately reverts back to the standard Jeremy style of psychological warfare, which I think is very funny.
And my teeth were pretty clean after I had so many brushing takes. I think it's funny that Kyle sits around in his place listening to his own music and filming everything he does. Again, Jeremy has some improvised victory dance for the big bad, which I think was really funny, and especially Miranda's reaction. She's dancing along. I thought that was pretty good, you know. And, we have the big plot twist after that, which is Doug turning evil, and this is something that we wanted to do with his character, just to give a broader perspective to the bad guys now. In Season 2, we have a lot to play with, so we're very excited to start working with Evil Doug. And it's a bit of a tear-jerking moment when Kyle and Anastasia have to run out. I think we captured some drama there. There's a lot of fans that commented they thought it was a very emotional moment for them. And I'm glad that we could pull that off in this what is mostly a comedy series. And as Miranda and I are running away from what is actually Casa Loma, it's a castle in the middle of Toronto. You see there's some micro-battling going on, which a lot of people want to know what happened in that room, but you're going to have to wait to find out.
All right, guys. So that was really good. I was really impressed with that. Nice job. So we're actually just going to switch. If you guys just want to comment perhaps on how revealing your real names felt or how the crowd reacted when you did in all of your live screenings while we switch over to our image here.
Yeah, well, surprisingly, the crowds reacted differently, which is something really interesting when you screen an episode in multiple locations. And you get to see how different crowds react differently, and you get to learn a lot, just I guess, about mob mentality in general, with one person starting a laugh and how that laugh spreads so quickly. In the Calgary screening, as soon as the music had cut in, people started to cheer, and as soon as they saw it directed by Jeff LaPere, it just burst into applause that continued throughout all of the credits with little variation until they got tired. With a show like Vancouver, it was actually really odd. They were sort of in a state of shock, and no one clapped at the directed by Jeff LaPere, so it didn't start any sort of rolling motion of the clapping. And there was complete silence until the Dave Dawei credit came up, at which point, just at the sheer excitement of seeing Dave on screen again, which is a testament to his popularity, which I wish would convince him to work with us again. They just exploded in applause, and that applause continued to the end. And it was really fantastic on so many levels.
I just have to say that I think the applause came because he was himself. That was at least my perception.
Yep, Dave is Dave, and I guess for the same reason he's not really a part of the show anymore is that, he's not really an actor, he's just himself, and he's just our friend that we sort of put in the show, and it's just amazing. The love he gets is just, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it's well-deserved, too, I think he added so much to the show just by being himself. He's a really hilarious guy, and you can kind of tell he's, in some shots, he's not really all that uncomfortable, he's not really all that comfortable on camera, but it works really well. Because, of course, not everybody is comfortable when you got this guy following you around with a camera all the time.
And a lot of it was probably because people can relate to someone who's just plain old them, Like, anyone who watches the show can relate to Dave the most, I'd have to say.
Yeah, as absurd as it may seem, in the universe of Pure Orange, he just might be the most sane person.
All right, guys, so enough questions from me. Now we're going to get some from the community for about 20 minutes. Hope you guys have enough time here. I know we're running a bit late.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, so here we go. We have one from Demon inside of our IRC who says, have you a generic idea of what to expect to accomplish in Season 2 of Pure Ownage? Will some characters get more major roles? Will there be more actors casted? And can we expect an all-out war between the two gamer armies? And most importantly, will you need extras? Trying to get a job there, I think.
For one, we're excited now that we're credited. We feel that a few more doors have opened in terms of the freedom to write the show. We're no longer restricted to this sort of purported reality of Season 1. We actually feel we can do a lot more, so we're really stoked about that. There will absolutely be new characters introduced. We're interested in constantly sort of evolving and expanding our universe. And as for extras, if you're a big fan of the show and you're willing to show up for some long hours for no money, like most of our extras, and you're in the Toronto area, then I absolutely recommend firing us an email because there's definitely opportunities.
Yeah, we're actually going to be casting from our main page soon. I'm going to put up an announcement once things settle down with Season 1. For Season 2, we're looking for all kinds of characters, major ones, small ones, and extras. So I think, we've had great success with this in the past. In fact, Dave's sisters and one of the Chinese bad guys were cast just from our main page saying, hey, we need some guys in the Toronto area. So yeah, if you're in the Toronto area, stay tuned to pureownage.com because we're definitely looking for actors.
All right, so the next question here is for you, Jeremy, or Jarrett. What games are you playing currently? If any at all.
Yeah, sorry, he's AFK. We're cooking dinner up here, and he had to go run to the stove, but,
What are we having for dinner?
eggplant parmesan. It's sort of Jeff's recipe. It's actually a lot tastier than that sounds. But currently, I'm playing. I'm playing a cracked version of the Supreme Commander beta. Thanks, BitTorrent, for that. Legitimately, I'm playing some Age of Empires 3, The War Chiefs. I'm not the hugest Age of Empires fan. It's a little too much economy and macro for my RTS tastes. But I feel like I'm in such a drought that, you know, it satisfies enough for now. I'm a big fan of my DS. Still daily, I'll boot up and at least have a couple online Tetris matches. I feel like every time I play, my Tetris level just gets to this new point, and now I'm multi-T spinning, and I've bumped my rank just past 7,200 now, and I just keep climbing and climbing, and it's such a simple old game, as weird as it sounds, but I have so much fun playing it, and I'll be lining up for the Wii at about 4 a.m. on Sunday, so I'm really excited for that next week, but mostly this week it's just been kind of going back and forth between the War Chiefs and Supreme Commander.
And if you could pick up a Wii for me, too, I'd appreciate it. But anyways, next question. Black Deaths asked, to the whole crew, or both of you guys, do you have any tips for someone who's trying to get their own internet show popular?
Well, really, I think the way we got popular was just through growing virally, which means someone's going to watch your show and they're going to tell all their friends about it. And they're going to become fans, and you can just grow from there. Really, I think on the internet, unless you want to start a massive advertising campaign, your show really has to have that property. It has to grow virally if you want it to get popular. And you know, comedy is the thing, is the number one thing that seems to go viral on the internet. People forwarding around jokes and funny videos and whatever. So we knew we had to make a comedy show, and we knew we wanted to make it about games because that's what we played. So I guess the other piece of advice besides viral comedy would be write what you know, write what you love, just like we did.
All right. Sounds good. And I think our own Sean Z. Hetherington has a question for you guys. Sean, go ahead.
Hi, guys. Actually, a good question that's been asked a couple times in Pound EGLN. A lot of people talking, and they're asking if Dave is ever going to come back.
Well, I would like to know the answer to that question, too. We'd love to have him back, and we're always talking, you know. So, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I don't want to say anything, because I don't want to promise anything, and then people are going to be disappointed. I don't know the answer to that question myself.
Okay.
All right, next question here is from I Am Canadian. Will Pure Ownage, I keep calling it Pwnage because I have no idea why. I don't know. I actually might want to ask you guys that afterwards. Anyways, are you ever going to shoot an episode in Hamilton, or have you ever shot a part/episode in Hamilton?
Why would we want to do that? Hamilton? no, this is all about the Ontario rivalry.
I agree.
But yeah, you know, I don't know. We had no plans, and I'm guessing this guy's from Hamilton.
I'm assuming so, yes.
And I feel sorry for him.
You can come to Montreal, though. Feel free to do so.
Oh, we love Montreal. Yeah, and we did travel there to shoot the scene with in episode 9 with Alex. And we had smoked meat with Alex, too, afterwards, and that was a tasty sandwich.
Ah, I wish I would have known.
Yeah, if you ever have the opportunity to go to Montreal and have some Montreal smoked meat, it's so fantastic. And I'm just such a fan of Montreal. I actually was only there for the first time just about a year and a half ago, and no city has ever made such a great impression on me in such a short period of time. And I'm just so excited to go back.
You heard it here, folks. Pure Ownage guys love Montreal. It's where I live, and I love it too. So moving on here, Nasty says, being Horde on Frostmane, do you ever come and visit the Frostmane vent server? Also, if willing to answer, which guild are you in?
I've never been on any general Frostmane vent or anything. The guild we're in is public information. That's called Cardinal Sin, and it's on the Alliance side. Jeff and I's characters are it's not fully public. All the members of the guild know who we are. But people outside of the guild, we like to restrict that information as much as possible, just so that I don't get corpse camped 24/7.
All right, next question here from Quick, who says, are we going to see more of Kyle in Season 2? I think he's just referring to at the end when, Kyle, you revealed your face to the camera, and I guess they want to know if you're going to be doing more of that in Season 2.
Yeah, we got some email about this, and I don't know how to really interpret this, but I got a message from a guy that said, you know, hey, Kyle, now that we all know what you look like and who you are, you know, I just don't want you to think you got to be in front of the camera the whole time in Season 2. Like, you know, just, you know, take it easy on being in front of the camera. And I'm like, well, what is he talking about, man? What is this? So anyway, yeah, I don't know. But really, we're not really going to be changing the format up. You know, if Kyle's going to be in front of the camera, he's going to be in front of the camera, but it's not going to be, it might not be in every episode. And we're just going to stop hiding Kyle, I think.
All right. Yeah, I mean, we're not actively going to go out and try to put Kyle on the show and make him a regular character in front of the camera. But we knew that we were crediting ourselves anyways and that everyone would know what Kyle looked like anyways, so it seemed a little cheesy trying to continue to hide him in the show and not have him be known. So we decided to reveal him. But, you know, we have a great formula and you know, we're not going to really mess with that too much. So I wouldn't expect any sort of drastic changes as to who's in front of the camera.
All right. I have actually a very good question here, which I myself was wondering. Were you guys concerned when fans found out that you were actors and your real names, or were you concerned about them knowing your real names? Is that why you concealed them?
Yeah, it's funny to us. I mean, really, what's in a name, I guess. We knew that there would be some fans that were a little disappointed, particularly the really young fans that might have a slightly blurred perspective on what's reality and what isn't. But for the most part, you know, most of the fans from episode 4 on were aware that this was not a documentary, but instead a mockumentary. And by episode 9, when Jeremy's throwing blue balls out of his hands, I think any question as to the reality of the show was no longer in doubt.
Yeah, I've read a lot of posts on the boards about this. Most people say that nothing really has changed now that we're credited. But there are some people that I don't really understand their state of mind when they talk about, you know, they see the credit sequence in episode 12 and they say, oh, too bad Jarrett's not a gamer or Jeremy's not a real gamer. You know, I don't know how they came to that conclusion when, in fact, the opposite is what is true.
All of the comments that are heard during the show, I'm a very hardcore gamer myself, and I know that you guys play games from some of the jokes you crack. There's no doubt in my mind. So regardless, I have another question here. Actually, my own question that I was wondering about before, I'm sure you guys have heard it thousands of times. You even addressed it as a joke in one of the shows, but why did you put the P and not the O? Was there some sort of joke going on there or what? In ownage, I mean, pure ownage.
You know, it's funny. That was it was a tough call that we made early on. This was when we made the preview, even before we even thought we were going to make a show, or when the ideas of the show that we might make were completely different from what ended up being pure ownage. But you know, it came down to there's this sort of division in the gaming community as to how to pronounce pwnage, I guess. You know, the P is a typo. And so we sort of interpreted a typo you did not pronounce. We'd always felt, we did some sort of dry runs with Jeremy talking, saying pwnage versus ownage, and the result was that we felt that it came out as something that the average audience member would see as just a little too cheesy or you know, a little too lame to be, you know, sort of acceptable. And you know, when we use ownage, it just flows really well, and it's something that we thought had a nice aesthetic to it versus pwnage. And personally, I know that I'm definitely on the ownage side. I use that word daily in my vocabulary, and I always say own because you know that is the root of what that is the root of you know where it comes from. And so you know, we had to make a decision early on, pwn or own. It was about 50-50 with the community, and we decided to go with own, mostly because of the sound of it. And we felt it just sounded a lot better, and it was something that was that would just catch on a little easier and be a little more consumable to the general audience.
All right, fair enough. You answered my question. So, Sean, go ahead.
Actually, here's a question that's being asked a lot. It's a little off topic, but I'm getting slammed with private messages on it. What are your guys' favorite NHL team?
Haha. Well,
oh, no, that's not going to help me.
sorry. I just want to make sure. Jeff isn't a hockey fan, so he has no favorite. I am born in Winnipeg. I was a huge Winnipeg Jets fan. My team was sold to a desert state many years ago, which ended up leaving me in a state of depression for quite a few years. However, I have lived the majority of my life in Calgary, Alberta, and I am a huge Calgary Flames fan for the last 10-plus years. It was very exciting for me for them to make the playoffs a few years ago and to do so well. And to this day, yes, I follow them daily in their pursuits. And good job, guys, in a 5-game winning streak.
I'm very glad you did not say you're a Leafs fan, Jared. I am so happy because it could have been all at war here.
I'm mad now. I was hoping for the Leafs.
Yeah, it's funny being in Toronto, you know, going out. They're pretty fanatical about the Leafs, and I've definitely found myself in some position where people have assumed I'm a Leafs fan, and they start talking poorly about the teams from the West. Like, they're from the West. Who cares about those bastards anyways? And I find myself just kind of nodding and smiling and pretending to agree with them as I think to myself that I can't wait till we own their ass in the playoffs.
All right, so thanks for that. Next question here is from Quick, who says, will we be seeing Pure Ownage tour the world owning Noobs? I think you guys already did this somewhat, but are you guys going to consider doing more tours of the world, perhaps going to venues that were not visited before?
Yes, we absolutely plan to travel the world with Pure Ownage. You know, we don't want to provide any firm dates. We don't want to break any hearts. But we have in our books, at some point, we will be visiting Australia to show some episodes and to hang out and have fan meets. We will be visiting Holland again. We will be visiting the UK. We will be visiting Norway and Sweden. And we will definitely be visiting the USA next season, probably for the season premiere. That much is I can say with 99% certainty.
All right, I have another question here from Demon, who says, what would it sound like if Jeremy yelled boom headshot? Interesting question.
Not nearly as cool as when Joel says it.
Was he actually upset when he had to say it so many times? Did he actually get irritated by it, or was that just part of the show?
I think it was reality sort of coming into the show a bit. Joel never really signed on to Pure Ownage to sort of be our I didn't do it boy. We always felt from the start that it was the character, FPS Doug, and just sort of the attitude that he couldn't escape these games, the sort of hyperactive ADHD FPS player that was really the comedy. So there was a bit of disappointment, and not just with Joel, but really like me. You know, the character was sort of my baby, and you know, I never had planned it to be a one-liner character. That's not really the style of comedy we're interested in creating. I really thought the character himself was really funny, and still to this day goes a little unappreciated because he's overshadowed by a catchphrase that we didn't really see coming, but I guess in hindsight it looks pretty obvious.
I personally think it helped define his character because he's very aggressive, and to yell like that is just very good to define him in the show. But here's a question here from Quick to both of you guys. Will Season 2 have steady intervals between episodes, like once per month, or will it be unknown with random releases like Season number 1, which is basically we don't know when it's coming out, and when it does, it's a surprise?
Yeah, basically we're going to keep doing what we're doing in Season 2. Because, you know, we're not sticking to any specific release schedule. We're not sticking to any specific episode length. This is sort of just we're going to sit back and we're going to create a show that we think is a great series on the whole that will make a great DVD set and, not have the standard restrictions, have to sacrifice episode quality for a deadline, for instance.
All right, fair enough. Kind of like I don't know if you guys know about Valve, kind of like their approach. get a quality game and delay it every day. Anyways, Severn asks, will they have any conventions in Toronto again anytime soon, or will you guys have any conventions?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by conventions, but we were at a comic convention not too long ago. But I think maybe the next big event we're going to have will be a CD release party or DVD release party in Toronto. So yeah, look forward to that. We'll announce it on the main page whenever we have a schedule, but it'll probably be after New Year's.
All right, so we got a couple more questions here. Quick again, he's really unloading questions here, but in Season 2, will Jeremy be seen playing more new-gen PS3 or Wii or old-school CS America's Army games?
Well, the standard response is that you probably don't want to know to maximize your enjoyment of Season 2. But in this case, it's definitely the case that you'll see some next-gen consoles in the show. Mostly because those consoles have made their way into our private lives, which has sort of motivated most of the... In fact, it's motivated all of the games that have ever made it into Pironage, are games that we play ourselves. And mostly what's kept me off of consoles the past few years, up until about a year ago, was the lack of online play. And so sort of once you go online multiplayer, it's really hard to go back. But now that these consoles have come online and I've slowly kind of gotten back into it the way I was quite a few years ago, pre my PC internet days, I'm playing a lot of console, and I'm really excited to sort of explore that and put that on the show, because all the consoles coming online, there's sort of this awesome blending of all these different platforms, all being online, and all these noobs just everywhere that I just have to own.
All right, I actually have a really good question here that I was wondering myself from Travis, and that is that in episode 11, how did you make the garbage can fall over? When Doug shot it.
Well, that's all thanks to our special effects wizard, Devin Langell. He did that entire effect, actually. There's two parts to it. One is the, it's an actual garbage can that he had picked up. And he's standing in the field. And, in fact, you can see a guy dressed in black with, you might be able to see the whiteness of his shoes, kind of moving in the background if you watch closely. And so he pulls on the fishing wire when Joel points the phaser at the garbage can. And it knocks it over, and you can actually see him after it knocks over kind of back up a bit out of the shot. So there's a little bit of evidence that it is in fact an effect in the video. And of course the laser charging up of the gun and laser firing out and smoke is all done using discrete combustion, which is a special effects package. And I think it worked out really well. He spent a lot of time on that, and it even looks great frame by frame. The smoke coming off of the garbage can is a nice touch. He had some smoke footage that he downloaded from some special effects archive.
Very, very cool. Next question here is, I think this is actually inspired by the end of the credit scene. You guys were showing a few bloopers, a few errors that happened in the show, and a question from Whiteblade, are we going to see more bloopers of the shows?
Yeah, we do have a small blooper reel that is actually at the end of the extended version of episode 10, which we only screen in theaters, so nobody on the internet has seen that. And that blooper reel will be on the DVD. And along with others and deleted scenes.
All right, so you're holding on the DVD there. Won't release it online, I see.
No, you got to have something. It's a real shame, because we'd love to just throw it all online, but it does. Then what's so special about the DVD, right? I just kind of want to, have it also in high resolution and all that.
Fair enough. All right, and let's see here from I Am Canadian. Says, if Jeremy, Kyle have time, what is your favorite television show? Entertain the viewers.
Well, television shows, we don't watch any actual television per se that is broadcast by cable or through the airwaves, but we watch television shows
that you can obtain in better quality and commercial free and on demand from various places on the internet. So yeah, we watch a lot of shows on our computers, and you know, I guess just to list some off the top, I like The British Office, Sopranos. I'm drawing a blank here, but here I'll let Jarrett list some of his.
I'm a fan of, again, yeah, obviously the BBC Office. I'm also a fan of the new NBC Office, but I would definitely recommend checking out the BBC Office first. Jeff and I are both fans of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is no longer made, but I would recommend going back and watching. If you can just get through the first season, it gets really good. I'm watching The Extras right now. That's the first, that's my new show that I'm only about 6 episodes into, but so far it's pretty good. And I guess beyond that, there's not much. I typically find myself downloading movies more than TV shows.
Knight Rider has to be the best show ever. Can't believe you guys didn't name that one off.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, one day I will own Kit, and we'll drive around and have good times.
I don't think I'll ever come up with the money to own Kit. That car was just unreal. But anyways, go ahead. No, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say that I hope as an actor I can one day become as awesome as David Hasselhoff.
High aspirations. Jeez, man. I'm just teasing. No, but Biohazard has a question here. Are Jeremy or Kyle fans of Halo or Gears of War?
You know, with Gears of War, it broke my heart. But Microsoft wrote us, I think, a couple Fridays ago, and they invited us to this closed door, free booze, free food showing of Gears of War to come and hang out. I guess they wanted the owner to be there to sort of play it, and they thought it was cool. And they scheduled this thing for 1 hour before our internet release of episode 12. So we had to say no, which really, really bothered me, because I really would have liked to check it out before everyone else got a chance to and play it. And as hilarious as it is, given that this game is getting tens, I have not yet played it. I have only read reviews, so I can't comment much on it.
All right, and Kyle or Jeff, did you play it or no?
No, I'm a big noob, but yeah, maybe I might get a new Xbox here, because I'm definitely getting a Wii, but I might get an Xbox and get into Halo, because it's just so popular, and I got to see what all this is about.
Yeah, a lot of my buddies who game competitively have sort of warned me of Halo 2, and then all my buddies whose opinion I trust, you know, these are hardcore gamers, many of whom play competitively. They prefer sort of the original Halo to the Halo 2 formula. So I will be checking out Halo 3. That much is a guarantee. But my motivation to get into Halo 2 at such a late point just isn't there.
Yeah, I think you kind of had to be there at midnight waiting at GameStop or EB Games to get into the whole hype, which I unfortunately was. Yeah, I'm a nerd. But anyways, Painkiller asks, who inspires Kyle the most director-wise? In a sense, who's the director you base your style off the most?
Well, I suppose the style for Pure Ownage is mostly, you know, mockumentary. I guess Mike Clattenburg of Trailer Park Boys is close to my counterpart. But of course, in the cinematic sequences, you see different elements. We've done some references to Tarantino, you know, all the big directors, and Martin Scorsese. I love the new Scorsese movie, The Departed, and you know, it blows me away. It just gives me, you know, it's there's so much room for me to grow as a director, and I'm inspired to one day become as awesome as Scorsese.
All right, next question here is something I was wondering as well. Actually, I have a question before this one. Was the hair money really real? Did you actually get paid in full? Because I saw that auction and I said, there's no way these guys are going to get the money.
Yeah, we almost felt that at first too when the bids were really going up. We thought, oh, this has to be a joke. And then we talked to some guys at the 3K mark, and these guys were serious collectors, and they were older guys. You know, they had their wives and their husbands, and yeah, they were serious collectors. So, you know, it was sort of a longer story than we had hoped for, but in the end, yeah, it all worked out really great.
Also, there was actually a guy that had bid more than the winner bid with the winning bidder. I think it was over $5,000, and no, it wasn't over. Yeah, maybe it was $4,600. I think something like that. But he was a serious bidder. He was a collector, and he spends a lot of money on magic cards. But his wife intervened and said, "I'm sorry, you're buying hair for $4,600. I'm sorry." So he sort of asked, "Hey, can I retract my bid?" I said, "Sure, man. Yeah, I understand. That's cool. But thanks for the bid anyway."
Now that leads into the next question: how long did the money last?
Not as long as I think most people would expect. Living in downtown Toronto isn't the cheapest living alternative you could make. So yeah, you know, just a couple months of rent and food, and I think we bought some equipment for the show from that. I think a light or two, and about half of it went to our trip to Holland, which we went right away right after the auction. So. It really didn't last that long. I remember reading posts in the forums from some fans who were like, "Oh man, these guys can live for like 5 years, man, 4K, forever off that." And I'm just thinking, "Oh wow, yeah, this guy's obviously 12." But you know, the post resurfaced a lot of times. But really, it was a couple months of rent and a trip to Holland, and that was that.
That sounds great, though. I wouldn't mind racking in 5K just like that. But moving on to the next question that we have here. I don't really understand what they're asking, but perhaps you guys will. What is the pattern of the gamer slang that you use, Jarrett? Do you have a pattern in the way you speak or your timing?
You know, it was nothing planned. It literally sort of evolved to be Jeremy, just sort of this character that, I just slowly learned over time, I guess. You know, he had slowly been growing in my mind after reading all these forums and being involved in the community for so long. He sort of represented this slightly exaggerated real-life version of all these people that I would interact with on the forums all the time, people that would make posts with the content similar to LOL, Rafa LOL, Noobfag LOL. And, you know, I don't know if I should be ashamed or whatnot, but he's just, I guess I learned over time that he's a little bit of this sort of person that's inside, I think, everyone that's competitive, that plays games. No matter how mature you are, deep down inside, when you win a really tight match, especially if it's a close competitive match, you just kind of want to get up and start humping your monitor. Or maybe that's just me. But I guess it's a combination of a little bit inside me and, you know, exploring sort of who I am deep down inside and a lot of the people that I interacted with throughout these last 10 boards.
Sounds good. Next question I have here is from Whiteblade. I think the majority of the question was that. What are your computer specs, both of you guys?
Oh, man. Whiteblade is obviously this kind of guy that wants to laugh at me because he knows his rig takes the shit. I might as well just tell him I'm running an XT or something because his laugh is going to be the same regardless. But, you know, it's funny. I'm not going to specifically answer this because, you know, again, we're in this weird position where we found ourselves to have this influence over our audience that, you know, is greater than we had originally sort of ever dreamed. And I feel that if I say something, if I start naming computer hardware companies whose hardware I use, that people might be more inclined to purchase their hardware or something weird like that. And we're always afraid of being seen as advertising someone's products when that's really not what it's about. We always put in stuff that we just love. So I won't give him any specifics, but what I will tell him is that my computer is 3 years old. It embarrasses me. It makes it difficult for me to play modern games, and that every day of my life I regret to some extent buying that extra light when I could have bought a new graphics card.
All right. Okay, so next question is, RZ, what does Jarrett think of the word nub as opposed to noob? Now, I don't know if you've played games a lot, but people like to refer shorthand with nub, and anyways, go for it.
No, it's cute. My girlfriend uses that word all the time, but as a man, I'm just going to stick with noob.
Oh, boy. Okay, so I don't know if that's going to offend any girls that are listening. I don't know if my girlfriend's listening, but if she is, I don't know what she's going to think. Next is Travis. What was the episode that you guys had the most fun making?
I think episode 2 had to be the most fun making, simply because the episode was, you know, it was what it was. We, Jeff and I met at my place. We sat down. He had brought over 2 6 of rye whiskey. You know, we cracked the bottle, had a few drinks, got prepped to do some live public filming, which has always made me very nervous. You know, as a performer in a closed set, you know, it's 1,000 times more comfortable than going out into public and trying to film in front of strangers. So we dipped into the whiskey and we went out. And while we were out, before we could still build up the courage, we ordered a couple pitchers of beer. And I think by the time we actually got around to making the episode, we were pretty done in, and we were having a great time. We really met some great people that night. We made a lot of friends, and you know, some really interesting stuff happens when you have a camera rolling and you've had a lot to drink. And I think on the DVD extras, you'll see some interesting stuff.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff that happened that night that we can't put on the DVD extras. It's too, yeah, you should see what happens when you point a camera at drunk girls. They start making out with each other for some reason. I don't know why, but it happened.
You know what? It's funny you say that. It's funny you say that, because as you guys may know, you guys are from the Toronto area, or you guys are residing in the Toronto area. I'm from Niagara Falls, Ontario. And anyone that's gone to Niagara Falls, Ontario knew that it's a huge tourist trap. You know, it's got nightclubs all over the place, and so on and so forth. So you're used to that kind of thing. You're always seeing the drunk people walking around. It's unfortunate, but it's funny at the same time. And then just recently I moved down to Tennessee, where you don't see any of that. Everyone just sits in their cars or stays in their house. No one really does anything at all.
Yeah. Ontario is a great, well, Canada in general is just a great place to be. You know, everyone's maybe there's a little more social cohesion, I guess. People are really friendly and nice. So, you know, we feel pretty comfortable being wasted, I guess, on the street. And, you know, I'm never going to have any complaints about females licking my face or anything.
Okay.
Which may or may not have happened that night.
All right. So moving on, just to clear the air a bit, because that was interesting. Let's see here. What other jobs do you guys have besides selling the t-shirts?
Sorry, what other jobs?
If any. Yeah, if any jobs that you have, what other jobs do you have? Aside from the t-shirt store.
Yeah, Jared and I are working full-time on Pure Orange because we just can't get the episodes out fast enough. So we've actually, in the early days of the Noob Store, we used to pack and ship and manage the orders ourselves. Now we have a staff working on that, so we can spend more time making the show. But it was really, really busy for us. We'd have to haul all the shirts to the post office ourselves. But we appreciated it, though, all these guys that were ordering shirts. And, you know, they didn't know it was being packed and shipped by Jeremy and Kyle themselves.
All right, and I actually have a question here. This is going back way back when I started watching the first episodes. I think, Jarrett, you were the one who actually said this about EA, and I started dying with laughter because let's just say I'm not a fan of EA, and I wanted to know if that actually reflected your true opinion on that company.
At the time, it did. And I think that every Zero Hour player, any serious Zero Hour player at the time, felt the same way. You know, it was a game that Jeff and I were both really into, especially me. You know, I was playing Zero Hour competitively at the time. It sort of consumed my life, and I like to consider, or like to think that I was probably, you know, the top Canadian player at the time, and we'd really hoped that Zero Hour would make it into the World Cyber Games and start to become played competitively, because it was, after all, the latest Command & Conquer game. It's a very popular franchise, and the game really did have a great feel to it. It was the UI and sort of the interface was just so fantastic. So yeah, you know, when we learned that the A had decided to just all of a sudden, for no apparent reasonable reason, stop supporting the game, we were really upset. We had sort of invested a lot in the show based on the idea that Zero Hour would continue to be this great game and it would be supported, and we were hoping and we had this dream that it would become the next Warcraft 3 or Starcraft, and that Pure Orange could help it become that. So yeah, you know, there was a lot of reality there, and we were very mad for a long time, and I think a lot of gamers feel the same way when a company doesn't treat its game with near the love that the players treat it. You know, it's kind of funny. But, you know, at E3 we had the opportunity to meet some of the guys at EA, and there's a lot of new guys on the team, and there's sort of these young guys, and a lot of them are as passionate as we are, and so my opinion was changed a bit, and I started to realize that, you know, a lot of the hatred I had for EA was pretty general, and I speak more of the publisher itself, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to sit down with some of the people that are working on Command & Conquer 3, because it really did give me some hope that the next iteration of the franchise will be better than the last. It will be well supported in it, and they seem to be taking esports a lot more seriously than they were. So all I can say is that I really hope that they learn their lesson, and I really hope they decide to give Command & Conquer the love that it deserved, and hopefully that we can see an RTS that isn't made by Blizzard competed in internationally and for the same sort of prize money. And you can bet that I will be there competing for Canada.
That's really awesome, actually. Have you been a fan of the series since the first one, or no?
You know, I became a big fan of the series at Red Alert 2. I was later than Jeff and our technical director, Mark. They were hardcore Command & Conquer fans back in the day. I wasn't actually as big into PC when I was younger as they were. I was really a console guy. I was really into Nintendo, and I was most of my days were spent playing console. So when I finally got a PC in my house when I was, you know, like 13 or 14, and I started coming around to RTS, it wasn't really till Red Alert 2 that I discovered this genre that was RTS, and it dawned on me that this is just the be-all and end-all of computer gaming, that I really felt it combined everything from all the games I loved, quick thinking, quick action, and they just blended into this beautiful, perfect mix, and so on.
All right, I'm actually hoping the same thing as you are for Command & Conquer 3, just because I'm really hoping EA proves themselves. They killed a lot of games that I like. Anyone out there who had Earth and Beyond, I don't know if you guys did, but that was the greatest MMO ever released, and EA killed it. Anyways, I'm not going to bash EA anymore, because they might be listening. They have eyes and ears everywhere. Anyways, next question is, Jeremy or Kyle, you say you pwn noobs or own noobs. Do you ever own pros, because owning noobs is easy mode? Okay.
Well, if you read the owner mail, we explain that compared to Jeremy, everyone's a noob. So the only possibility, logically, is for Jeremy to own a noob. Hence the I Own Noobs t-shirt.
Yeah, it's funny. That question's been asked a lot, and it's kind of funny. But I think if you really understand Jeremy's character, you understand that in that mindset, you never give anyone the credit they deserve. No one compared to Jeremy, from Jeremy's perspective, has any skill at all. Everyone is a noob, and this attitude sort of resonates through a lot of the professional community and how they view each other. And it's a common insult to be thrown around, and et cetera, et cetera. But the truth is, in Zero Hour, absolutely, I own pros. You know, I played at the highest tier that there was to play it competitively, and I expect to continue that for the next versions of the game as well. But, you know, considering the Pure Ownage universe, you know, you should really read I Own Noobs, meaning that I own everybody and that everybody is a noob.
All right, so that is actually the last question of the night. Guys, it was awesome. You guys answered the questions great. I really enjoyed the commentary. Do you guys have any last words?
Just like to say, we had a great time, and there were many, many excellent questions. I'm glad we got to get this information out, especially in the early days. You know, we were just credited here, so it's the early days of us acting out of character, and there's a lot of information we want to get out to the fans that they've been wanting to hear, and we've been wanting to say. So I'm glad that we have opportunities like this where we can get that done.
It would be a pleasure if you guys came on the air again. We'd welcome it whenever you guys would like.
Awesome, yeah. I've had a great time. I mean, it's always fun for us to sit down and talk to gamers just about how we feel about gaming in general and the show and whatnot. And I especially personally look forward to there being an RTS game, whether or not that's Supreme Commander or Command & Conquer 3 or some, you know, StarCraft 2 at the is probably the last ditch. There's a game that I can get into competitively as I was in the Zero Hour, and I especially look forward to competing in these games. I think people will be surprised.
All right, that's Kyle and Jeremy, guys. I am John Renegade Supinarius alongside with Sean Z. Hetherington. Thank you for tuning into EGLN for the X-Fire MTV Gamers Night version 2.0. This was Pure Ownage's night, but tomorrow we have a Counter-Strike Source event coming up. It's going to be the pros going at it against each other. Teams will be announced tomorrow. Thank you all for coming out. Peace out, and have a great night.